It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 21st day of September 2020. Summer is gone. Summer is dead. And so we go downhill into that rotten, miserable, foul season, otherwise known as autumn, when people say things like,
"Oh, I just love the changing of the colors of the leaves."
That means they're dying.
All right, Bob, that's enough. You better get happy real quick.
No. Yes. Summer's over. We're going to...
It's going to be fine.
You freeze more than I do during the cold weather.
That's right, Buttercup, so suck it up. We'll just suffer together quietly with a smile on our
faces. All we got in common is our misery, Joe Keenihan used to say, so the least we can do is share it.
Do not put me...
So there we go. Empty lake... Empty sea, the sun goes down alone. Yep. Summer's done. I know, not till tomorrow, but this is damn well close enough. And yet, on these last couple of days of summer, we have had two of the most beautiful days of the year, bar none. Not a cloud in the sky. It's been something approaching perfect here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia, Stan. It really and for truly has been. Hi! I'm Bob, and I'm Bob, who is 8 days into quitting smoking. I'm Bob, who has figured out the answer to a question. It's sort of like that old Tootsie Pop ad. You know the one, where the kid goes and says, "Mr. Turtle, how many and." And you know who the turtle looks like in that old Tootsie Pop ad, right? Sure. Mr. Turtle, how many licks does it take to get to the bottom, to the middle of a Tootsie Roll Pop? And the old turtle says, "I don't know," in curiously turtle-like fashion, if you know what I mean. "Oh, I don't know. But however many it takes, we're going to have hearings on them." Right. "Let's ask the old owl." And the owl says, "Let's find out. One, a two, three," and bites into the Tootsie Pop. Well, it's something like that. I have figured out how many days I have to go without a cigarette before I start having the horrifying cigarette dreams. Because every time I've ever quit, they've come. And the answer, in this case, is 8. On this, the 8th day of quitting smoking, well, I've had my first cigarette dream. The one where I light up. And the minute I get that first lung full of smoke, all the alarm bells and whistles and sirens and go off, klaxons and whang, whang, whang. No, I quit. This is awful. Yeah, that happened. That happened. But it does. It didn't change anything. I'm sitting here broadcasting with a little nicotine pouch tucked betwixt my upper gum and my cheek, and I'm getting my necessary nicotine fix, and I'm okay. I don't need it. But still. It was frustrating. Agnes gets a lol from Darlene in Connecticut. Suck it up, Buttercup. Love it. Yeah, thanks a shit ton for reminding me today was the last full day of summer, Bob. I'd forgotten until you mentioned it. Ah! Look, we got to get used to it. I was in the store today and I saw a stack of pumpkins and I just went, fuck you! Fucking pumpkins. Canned pumpkin for pumpkin pie is a fraud. It's not even really pumpkin. It's squash. Pumpkin spice has nothing particularly about pumpkin to it. It's just, well, it's just ginger and cinnamon and clove and nutmeg and allspice and all ground up. It's apple pie spice, goddammit. Oh, but there's nothing to get all the white girls excited by calling it apple pie spice latte. Yeah. Oh, dear. I seem to have gone off on a mini rant. I apologize. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is, in fact, no different. What's that? Steve in New York says, summer is dead, autumn lives. Yeah, autumn leaves. Fuck autumn. Sorry, I don't like it. I mean, we're already down in the 40s overnight. Can barely crawl into the 70s. It's like my skin has forgotten the feeling of warmth. But it was a good weekend. They drove Ferg to the point of collapse with a pair of 16-hour days at that godforsaken cesspit of a convenience store. And so he's been in almost complete and total hibernation for about the last 48 hours. And he doesn't have to go back in until Wednesday, if he goes back in. I'm kind of rooting for not going back in. Because, among other things, at that crappy-ass convenience store, apparently I picked up a screw in a tire. Did I pick the screw up in my tire where I could get it patched? Oh, fuck no! I picked it up on the shoulder of the tire, right there where the tread meets the sidewall, and you can't, and I have this from three independent sources, you can't patch that shit. So today was four brand new tires, because it's an all-wheel drive vehicle, and when you replace one, you got to replace them all, or you fuck up your drivetrain. So that was a happy little thing that happened today. Not so happy. But I did manage to put a figurative finger in the eye of Donald J. Trump. The J stands for four-ply steel-belted radial, because I put Goodyears on the car. They were not the best tire. They were the cheapest tire. And it'll be a small miracle if they get 20,000 miles, because it's a very soft rubber, but that means it's going to be grippy. So that's cool, too. Anyway, back to every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. Thanks going out to our subscribers, our PayPal subscribers, over the course of the weekend. Thank you very kindly indeed. Let's see here. Let's go back to, listen, 2029. Let's go back to the 19th, shall we? Thank you very kindly to Sharon. And thank you to Clayton. Thank you very much. Thank you to Carl. Thank you to Dr. John in New Mexico. Thank you to Reverbo, the human man. Thank you to Unbillable Rick. Thank you to Tina and Armand. Thank you to Vincent. Thank you to Joan in Talibandiana. And thank you to Harold, president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Now, a bit of an announcement to begin the program. I put this up on social media, and I put it at the Horn page and my page on Facebook. I put it up on Twitter. I had a fantastic offer, a kind and generous offer, from our buddy Larry in Liberalville. He sent a note along yesterday. Matching challenge and RBG. The derecho in Iowa sucked the air out of the middle of August for me. We were spared, but the neighbor next door lost 7 trees, but we still had cleanup and communications outages with which to deal. It's been a challenging summer, and the death of RBG rings like a mournful bell. I caught your Friday program and heard you're in the midst of your own trying times. I hope your situation improves, but this year has been, as others have expressed, one giant shit show. Let's see, another word for shit show would be fecal fest. Yes. My one optimism, Larry in Liberalville says, and it has its own dark side, is that President Putin Pence will nominate some judge that will make the Supreme Court look totally disconnected from America. On a positive note, since it is birthday month in these parts, I would like to propose a challenge. Lift a PBR, or your favorite libation, to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, RBG, and thank her for her inspiration to other women and to everyone of decent conscience and morality and ethics in this country. On the monetary side, I will match every $75 you raise with an equal amount, up to $750. If you can reach the $750 in 4 shows, I'll add another $50. My hope is that this will clear the month of September for you, and you can start the fall with a little joie de vivre. And Larry, just a little while back, sent some fantastic jams, homemade. And my God, have they been delicious on things like salt rising toast and sourdough toast, and heck, even local, not nearly as good as New York or Montreal bagels. Oh, my God, they're so good. Thank you, Larry. And thanks for that challenge. So there's a total of $750 in challenge money on the table. 4 days to get there. And if it is met, then that will mean that there is that we are done. Whenever we get done, we'll be done with fundraising for the month of September. And that will be nothing short of miraculous. And so, with that in mind, thank yous. Because, like I said, I put this up on social media the other day, or this morning. It's all running together after a while. And the first one through the gate responding to that challenge was our pal Joy in Ann Arbor. Andy jumped in as well. And thank you to Barbara for jumping in, and Dave number 11, and Kenda in Missouri, and now Jeremy in Vermont. What does that mean on a $750 challenge? Well, that means it means we are $120 in to the $750 challenge. So that means there's $630 remaining on that challenge. And if we knock it out, remember, if we knock it out within 4 days or less, it gets a little bump added to it. So If you want to help out, you know, the PayPal interface is over at headon.live. It's easy, easy. And it would be I can scarcely say how much fun it would be to be able to just go the remaining 8 days or so of September with no mention of fundraising whatsoever except to thank subscribers. So there we are, 630 to go. And you know what? If I got any brains, I might want to write that down. Which I just did. So I'll just do some ciphering as we go, and we'll keep going. Okay. Let me see here. Let's do some... Okay. I can happily tell you that matching challenge is down to $380. That's powerful. $380. And that finishes the challenge. We just got a big whack on the balance, courtesy of a dear anonymous friend of the program. So it is Moran Monday, and we've got oodles to go into. Apparently people think I'm a little bit cranky. Billable Rick wants to know, did you wake up on the wrong side of the bed today? You sound like a grumpy-ass man. Well, you could say that. Well, you could say it has to do with that. Got really frustrated watching Ferg be driven to the point of collapse. Because, you know, his mental health is of paramount importance, and this isn't good for it. Ron and Raleigh says, if you quit cold turkey, your body is free from nicotine in 3 days. If you don't keep putting more into your bloodstream, so stop it, Bob. You can do it. You don't want me to stop it yet. You want me to succeed, Ron. And so I will titrate down. What I've done is I've beaten most of the physical associations. There's no ashtray in the studio, and on this eighth day of quitting, I'm just about to the point where I'm not automatically just reaching for the cigarettes, and I'm not jumping in the car and reaching for a cigarette there. Waking up in the morning, that's still a little bit sketchy. Oh, and by the way, Saturday, maybe this is what it is. There's some carryover. I thought I had ordered some new decaf espresso capsules, but I was not sufficiently careful. I ordered real caffeine espresso capsules. But I convinced myself that they were decaf capsules. So Saturday morning, and you know, I'm the one who gets up. I get up in the morning, and it's one of those little things. I dearly love to get up in the morning and make Agnes's first cup of coffee for her, and I make one for me, and you know, the frothy milk because it's an espresso machine, and God, she loves it, and I do too. And thanks again to Chris in Germany for that birthday present for her. We both enjoy it immensely. And so I made hers, and I always make hers first, and I take it to her. And then I went and made mine with the pods I thought were decaf but weren't. No, hell no, they weren't. And so I did something I should never, ever do. I dosed myself with caffeine. Whew! Mm-hmm. And Agnes kept asking, "You okay?" And I'm like, "Well, I think so." Turned out I wasn't okay. So maybe that's part of it. Steve in New York says, sounds like someone OD'd on his cranky pills. No, I'm just at 8 days. 8 days. Bill in Allentown. Thanks, Agnes. Hey, Bob, the end of summer brought out your inner Lewis Black.
Well, now, what's to be joyful about with the coming of autumn? Tomorrow is the equinox. I'm sure my Wiccan friends will be dancing around a fire somewhere, and that's cool. Sounds fun. But the bottom line is, as of tomorrow, the days start getting shorter. And that means it's downhill to the winter solstice, when there will be hardly any light in the sky at all. You know, and pity the poor people of Tierra del Fuego and Iceland and our pal Scott in Sweden and our friends in Finland and Norway and the far upper reaches of far frozen Canada. I mean, I'm in a fairly temperate zone, and I'm still upset. I think I just want to live at the equator. I think that's what I want. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's all part of it. Darlene in Connecticut says, the one play that thespians will not call by its name for fear of being jinxed. And I won't, as an amateur thespian myself, I won't say the name of the play, because I would like for this program to continue. For Bob, maybe that play's name equals pumpkin spice. Will pumpkin spice be the two words Bob may forever eject from his lexicon? LOL. No, I don't think I can eject it from my lexicon, Darlene, because I hate it too much. It just pisses me off. Yeah. Well, thanks, Ron and Raleigh. Ron sent me a link about how you don't have to tire shaving, all-wheel drive car, no replacing all four tires. But all four tires were shitty, and they needed replacing anyway. So that was it was bound to happen sooner or later, and might as well happen now. Jack in Shreveport says, flats, tires. Yeah, the thing about not repairing punctures when they're in that sidewall area or wherever it is true. It's a shoulder right between the sidewall, right as the sidewall joins the tread. That's what you're supposed to buy the add-on tire insurance for. Of course, that insurance expires after some number of miles on the tire, which you would definitely have exceeded, I'm sure. When I lived up in Colorado, I came upon a tire store that was run by its owner. When paying him for the first set of tires I got there, he gave me one price without all the bullshit add-ons and like tire insurance. I never went to any other place for tires again. Yeah, we don't have that many places. And, I mean, I called all over, and this was the best I could do. Trey in Kentucky, Stan. Is it really that noticeable? Oh, Jesus. Via Twitter. Trey in Kentucky stands is just tuned in. Bob's overdosed on caffeine and something about pumpkin spice. What kind of show is this? It's Monday, Trey. It's Monday. That's what it is. It's a Monday. And in terms of lifting one per the request of Larry in Liberalville, per the request Larry's request, lifting one to RBG. Steve in New York says, Samuel Adams named a beer after RBG. It's a Belgian brew IPA called When There Are Nine, a reference to Ginsburg's famous reply to the question about when there will be enough women on the Supreme Court. And remember to say, Oyez. Oyez, Oyez, Oyez. This court is now in session. Those having business before this court may now step, shall now step forward and heed the dread. Yep. Oyez, Oyez. Instead of cheers. Thanks, Steve. That's a good one. And I love that quote about when there are nine. Well, you know, there will be enough women on the Supreme Court when there are nine women on the Supreme Court. And after all, there have been nine men. Nine men gave us Dred Scott. Nine men gave us Plessy versus Ferguson. Nine men gave us the slaughterhouse cases. Nine men gave us Schenck and Froework and Debs. And on and on and on with every rotten decision that the Supreme Court of the United States, which is by far better at rotten decisions than good ones, have ever given us. Thank you. Thank you to our pal, Tony. Tony's just jumped in, and we're down to 360 to go on Larry and Liberalville's Hoist One to RBG Challenge. Thank you, Tony. Thank you to Samson. That's a big jump. We are now down to 285 to go on Larry and Liberalville's Challenge. That's tremendous. And Randy in PA says, look, in the heat, I can't take more clothes off. I suppose that I could, but the neighbors would call the cops. In the cold, you can always pile more clothes on. Yeah, it's not so much the temperatures as it is the light. You know, what did Frost say? Stormy world, the days that you are not furled and mist and cloud were days so very, very few, I cannot help but wonder whence I get the get the lasting sense of so much warmth and light. Ta-da. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, as you know, the other side of the coin for when there will be enough women on the court. Remember, it was the Supreme Court comprised of 8 men and 1 woman, I believe, that gave us Bush v. Gore. Yes, yes. And the one woman on the court gave us Bush v. Gore. She was the swing vote. All she had to do was do the right moral, even mathematically correct thing. And think of all that would not have happened. Hell, we probably wouldn't even have Trump now. Living at the equator, Stephen New York says, given that the refrigerator light causes you sunburns, living at the equator would turn you into a burnt piece of bacon. That's what the sunscreen's for. And Silent R. Lamar trying to inject a little bit of optimism into this. Come on, Bob, shorter days means less Trump. No, no, it doesn't. The days are just, it's the daylight that's not as long, not the days themselves. We're not changing the physics of or the mechanics of the movement of the planets around the sun and through the galaxy. No. Yeah, and even better, says Stephen New York, 9 white men gave us all you mentioned in addition to Lochner and Korematsu. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And out in sunny San Rafael, subject line, Larry's challenge, our buddy Tom says, I'll have to do this one by snail mail, but I'll get $100 on the way to you tomorrow morning. So, Larry in Liberalville's challenge is now down to 185. Thank you, Tom. Thanks a ton. Tom adding a little bit ago, 8 days? 8 days, you got it licked. Hang in there. Thank you, Tom. I'm trying. And I think I will. I think I got it licked. But I'm not going to rest on my laurels, and I'm not going to say I have quit smoking. Because ask anybody who is a friend of Bill W., they don't say I am an ex-alcoholic. Anytime you're dealing with addiction, you are dealing with a constant state of recovery. You're never truly safe. Because it does. It warps your brain a little bit. If not warps, it changes. It does things to your brain chemistry. No sympathy from Jeremy in Vermont. Temperatures, it was colder here Saturday and Sunday night than some days in February with a full sun. Take it from me, who cruises the snow-covered fields in February. I also noticed a jump in leaves getting color and being shed. Oh, it's here. It's here. It's definitely here. Oh, that's right, that's right. There was, that's right. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was on the court during Bush v. Gore, Steve reminds us. One woman got it wrong, one woman got it right. So it was 7-2. And Silent R. Lamar says, nine men speaking on behalf of Clarence Thomas, it was nine white men. Or, and a wannabe. And Keith, Texas Way, says, from one former smoker to another, my doctor told me it takes 72 hours for the nicotine to clear the body. It takes 21 days to change a habit. Don't count the day, don't stop, but count the days until day 22. You can do it. Two phrases to remember. Yes, dear, and I'm sorry. They come in handy during these times. I can see how they would. I can see how they would. Thank you, Keith. Of course, those are usually in my vocabulary anyway, but it's a good reminder. And by the way, Randy in PA says, pumpkin spice sucks. Apple pie spice rules. Give me an apple pie with sugar and apple pie spice and a crispy pie crust any day. I prefer it over cake. And Randy says there is a difference between pumpkin spice and... Yes. Adding, peak fall foliage is predicted to be between October 19th and October 26th this year. I reckon in Randy's neck of the woods there in PA. Have a match in memory of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Our buddy Thomas Jug a Punch has taken us down to 135. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you immensely. Yeah, billable. Steve beat you to it a little bit, but yeah, there were two female justices on the court for Bush v. Gore in December 2000. Sandra Day O'Connor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yep. Thank you, Billable. Jesus, Bob, for those of us from the low-light environs and in the whitest skin competition invented pubs, cantinas for sunscreen purposes. Oh, goody. The neighbor has the little two-stroke motorbike out. Irish Dave says, all ye... oh, yes, all draw near, be heard. And then, yeah, Jesus, Bob, that's C-H-E-E-S-U-S. For those of us from the low-light environs and in the whitest skin competition invented pubs for sunscreen purposes. Mm-hmm. Stop it, Bob, says Lee in New York. Are you sure Clarence Thomas even speaks? Well, he bowed and scraped toward the white conservatives, and that constitutes speech on his part. And yes, it is spring in the Southern Hemisphere. Flavio adds, Doug, mouthful of collards, Collins, wants to introduce an amendment prohibiting SCOTUS packing. Oh, that's a real Lulu. That's just a delight. Uh-huh. So it's taken a little bit, but we've gotten through most of, and it's the end of, at Tierra del Fuego, James in Illinois says it's summer there, Bob. No, it's the beginning of spring in Tierra del Fuego, the end of winter. That's what I need to do, be able to just go back and forth and spend my time perpetually in summer. My favorite time of year is like May and June, because all you need is a light coat at most. So we've got all that sorted out, I suppose. And Ron in Raleigh says, 47 years, I think I can safely say I'm quit. I have no desire for tobacco. Where in the blue blazes did all this pumpkin spice bullshit come from? There was no such thing when I was growing up. This was some marketing genius's idea. Yeah, I think you're right. That's exactly where it comes from. It comes from some godforsaken corporate test kitchen. Hey, let's tell them it's pumpkin spice latte. the white women will lose their minds. So there were probably some psychologists involved, too. Well, that's the thing about you have no desire for tobacco, but the thing is, one fuck up and you're right back where you started. So that's the nature of addiction. And, thanks very kindly to a friend of the program. We've been enjoying some lovely snacks since I went to the mailbox on Saturday. Got a load of provisions, including some of those delicious banana chips and some snack mix to just nosh on, and most particularly some lovely Annie's brand unpaid product placement Worcestershire sauce to mix into my not from concentrate fresh squeezed tomato juice. The only thing I like, not counting of course our friends, members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Taliban, Indiana. The only product I like that comes from Taliban, Indiana. Yes. That only ate up 36 minutes of the program, but rest assured, it is, in fact, Moran Monday on the Horn. Oh, yes, it is. And, let's get started. I guess if I well and truly, well, nil nisi bonum and all that bullshit, but is it speaking ill of the dead? And I don't mean the band. Remember, the first days are the hardest days. Don't you worry anymore. Because when things seem like easy street, there's danger at your door. I'm bearing that in mind. The minute I say I got it licked, I'm going to be in trouble. But regardless, I'm to the point where I can have a cup of coffee, or at least decaf. I know y'all don't count decaf as coffee, and not just lose my tiny mind. So, damn it, I hate the fucking pop-ups. I hate how they do such a fantastic job of hiding the little X to get out of the damned ad. Anyway, via Crooks and Liars, the story of a guy named Tony Tenpenny. Sounds like a character from a Dickens novel, and from all appearances, he would have been one of the characters from a Dickens novel that nobody was particularly upset about when he ran into some justice. Well, the Tennessean, the newspaper out of Nashville there, it's a Gannett paper now, it used to be a great paper. Great Southern paper. The Tennessean reports, former Nashville council member Tony Tenpenny has died due to complications from COVID-19, Vice Mayor Jim Shulman confirmed Sunday. Tenpenny was hospitalized for more than a month at one of the St. Thomas hospitals and was placed on a ventilator earlier in September. He died overnight, Shulman said on Sunday afternoon. Well, condolences to Tony Tenpenny's family. But it is Moran Monday. It's so Moran Monday. And so that means, well, you know.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Mm-hmm.
hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, mere steps away from the Carnival Midway, where only moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain hope of bringing home for your very own a little baby iguana. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Behind these thin cybernetic veils of canvas, we've got them all for you. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, maggots, trumpanzees, republicans, all of them in their wild variety, waiting to thrill you, annoy you, disgust you, terrorize you. Only in the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We have a special exhibit this evening, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins. We have Tony Tenpenny. Tony Tenpenny, who had run for the Nashville City Council and lost. Tony Tenpenny was a big-time maggot. He despised Black Lives Matter. And he, of course, because of the nature of the story here, denied the existence of COVID-19 as a giant hoax. Back a little while ago, somewhere around the 12th of September, his wife had said that he was improving, and we'll have quite a testimony to share. Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like there won't be any testimony sharing. It was back on back earlier in this month when Robbie Tenpenny, who is was Tony's wife, said, "I was finally able to see my sweet Tony today after 34 days. I cried myself to sleep last night praying and asking God to let me see him and tell him we all love him. Prayers work." He's still completely sedated. That means he was horizontally crucified on his belly with a garden hose down his throat and was in a chemically induced coma so that he could not see, could not move, could not feel, but could hear everything going on around him. Yes. And will be until they can get him off the ECMO machine. He is improving. It's small, but we'll take baby steps if needed. He is still dependent on the ventilator at 50%. Please continue praying for his recovery. What a testimony he will be able to share. Well, I guess not. It was back on July the 7th, you see, when Tony Tenpenny tweeted, "What the fuck, really? You have to be kidding me. The CDC and the WHO are pure lying asses. They're not telling you the truth. Wake up, sheeple!" He also retweeted something from somebody named Danny Mason on June the 29th, a photograph of the half of a woman's face wearing a mask, and the meme says, "Wearing a mask signals one of two things. I have been manipulated to live in irrational fear, or I am willing to be controlled by a socialist agenda." Tony Tenpenny approved of that statement. And asking why, he also quote tweeted another statement. "We actually shut down a $22 trillion economy for a 0.1% death rate. Why?" Well, I'm afraid Tony Tenpenny will never be able to answer that. Being how Tony Tenpenny is all dead now. Yeah. Anti-masker, mask-hole, COVIDiot, COVID denier, QAnon, big QAnon follower. Sometime yesterday, he shuffled off this mortal coil, breathed his last, and will be heard from no more. One individual noting, "Tony served his community as a council member honorably.
until he listened to Trump and QAnon's lies, his family is left to pick up the pieces. And so they are. He who lives without the mask shall die without the mask. So I guess requiescat in pace, Tony Tenpenny. Lead Moran on this Moran Monday for the 21st day of September 2020. Silent R. Lamar noting, on the grounds, Mr. Tenpenny is down to a half a cent. Not celebrating it. We've just crossed 200,000 Americans dead. And it's going to get worse. The clarion call to please get your flu shot has begun. Agnes does not like to leave the house, but I got to get her out for her flu shot. I got to get me out for mine and the boy out for his. That's another reason I dread the coming of autumn. Because of what we know comes with it. Stephen, New York, noting, it's clear the goddess of irony is not to be trifled with. Oh, no, you tweak her little pink tomato nose at your peril. Billable Rick, wait, this is a cowbell. Mr. Tenpenny is pound foolish. Tenpenny wise, pound foolish. Lee in New York, how can someone with that name have no sense? Sorry, it's too obvious not to use. Yeah, that was shameful, but we'll use it just the same. Tony Tenpenny, Stephen, New York, says, to avoid the inevitable, it's in the Constitution! I don't reckon he's going to be saying that anymore. No. And by the way, so now that we've got our lead Moran on the board, Bob, I think all of us will remember where we were when we heard the news that we lost RBG. Like many of us, I was on the front porch featuring Bob Kincaid when at approximately 7:30 Eastern, I heard Bob yell, "Fuck!" Most of us on the front porch instantly and instinctively thought that the sneaky snake Jake had returned to the studio. That's Sam the studio serpent had returned to the studio with Stinkbug Stan saddled on his back. Then Bob announced that Justice Ginsburg had died. Bob left the studio to inform the lovely Agnes of the sad news, and her reaction was much more subtle, unbeknownst to Bob. We all heard Agnes yell, "Fuck!" as well. However, nobody on the porch let on that we actually heard Agnes, even after Bob told us. If anybody out there who identifies as being a progressive did not have an immediate involuntary fuck to give, then you're really not a progressive. Even the asshole Reagan Democrats were flying an F-bomb, according to Reuters reports. Richard was on a Zoom call with his family celebrating the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, when I informed him and most of his family. They all knew that I would not interrupt them in the midst of their celebration if it were not an important announcement. They were all stunned when Jay, his son, uttered the exact same word we all did. Ironically, Jay, an Ivy League grad with a degree in English, could only muster up an F-bomb after hearing the news of Justice Ginsburg's death. Jay, by the way, edited Jordan Belfort's book, you know, the character of which The Wolf of Wall Street was based. Belfort, just like his character in the movie, was true to form because during Jay's mother's funeral, Shiva, in 2014, Belfort kept texting and harassing Jay for the finished version of the book. I took two old clock radios that did not work anymore into the basement garage and smashed them right into the downstairs dumpsters. Yes, I clocked those clock radios. I thought to myself, as if we do not have enough to be worried about. And then this. As far as I'm concerned, I hope Moscow, Moore, and Mitch replaces Ginsburg before the election. And with a lightning rod figure such as Amy Coney Barrett, because this will just stir up more anger and angst on the left, and hopefully activate most of those who identify as Democrats to push people like Pelosi, Schumer, and Biden in a progressive path. At this point, I don't give two flying fucks about centrist or Reagan Democrats because those people really are not Democrats anyway. What's that, Giraffrey? Giraffrey says, we need to stack the court. We need to hit a grand slam. We need a Ruthian court right now. Thank you, Giraffrey. As usual, you're high-minded as you view everything from a supreme view of life. What Jeffrey was referring to was the fact that after the next conservative judge is seated, the court will be 6-3 in favor of the hardcore Republicans. So according to our resident legal analyst Billable Rick, if the Democrats can take the Senate with at least 50 and win the White House, the Dems could get rid of the filibuster, change some Senate rules, and fill the court with four Supreme Court judges. Babe Ruth hit many grand slams in his day and was one of the most feared baseball batters ever. So much so that the word Ruthian is now recognized in some dictionaries. In honor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Senate needs to hit a grand slam and score four on the court, and instead of a Babe Ruthian court, we will have a Ruthian Bader court. This has been Joey's Journal for More and Monday, the 21st day of September, with Giraffrey rooting for a Ruthian court. Well done. Well done, Joey. And while I am not well-versed in Jewish liturgy or tradition that much, I did notice something over the weekend, and I trust it to be true because I trust the source. Apparently there is a tradition. Of course, this weekend was Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, a time for the eating of apples and honey to signify bringing the new year in with sweetness and flavor and happiness. In a way, I think apples and honey probably beats the daylights out of collard greens, turnip greens, cooked cabbage, all of which mostly Protestants cook on New Year's in hopes of more money in the coming year. The Jews, on the other hand, would just be happy with happiness. But I learned a new word this weekend. Tzaddik. T-Z-A-D-I-K, I think. And, of course, I don't read or speak Hebrew, but tzaddik is the especially potently blessed spirit of a human being, a righteous person who passes away at Rosh Hashanah becomes a tzaddik, or so I'm told. Jewish theology members of the Horn Family Community Congregation can be free to jump in on that one. Well done. Well done, Joey. And yes, a cowbell for you and Giraffrey, courtesy of Billable Rick. And I concur in his opinion. Cowbell for Joey's excellent journal today. And you may recall that we were in conversation when the news broke, indeed. And you may also recall that as I closed the program on Friday evening, I advised all and sundry to please avoid the news cycle for a couple of days. That's true. That's true. Tom and Sunny San Rafael pointing out, apples and honey beats the hell out of pumpkin spice. I couldn't agree more. But I advised everybody on Friday, avoid the to avoid the news cycle because it would just be full of obnoxious, celebrating, disgusting maggots talking about how we could now save the precious little fetuses. Yeah. And of course, true to form, that's exactly what happened all weekend long. As they gloated and behaved precisely as shittily, as fecally as we expect maggots to behave. And so today, responding to the last wish of the dying wish of Ruth Bader Ginsburg as dictated to her niece, namely, my most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed. Well, this being the beginning of the week, COVID Caligula, who had much to celebrate, you know, 200,000 dead Americans and whatnot, he went over to talk to the folks at Fox and Fiends, where he declared that, well, maybe Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't really say that. Yeah, that's the ticket. She didn't say it.
Well, I don't know that she said that, or was that written out by Adam Schiff and Schumer and Pelosi? I would be more inclined to the second. Okay, you know, that came out of the wind. It sounds so beautiful. But that sounds like a Schumer deal, or maybe a Pelosi or Shifty Schiff. So that came out of the wind. Let's see. I mean, maybe she... Well,
Yeah. Now, bear in mind that he has just called the niece of Ruth Bader Ginsburg a liar. Because Ruth Bader Ginsburg's niece is the woman who released that information. Well, this is just another one of those moments where we have to just deal with the reality that when we are talking about these disgusting vermin and their leader, the vermin in chief, there's no bottom. There is no basement. There is no end to how genuinely revolting they can be. He accused Adam Schiff of writing Ruth Bader Ginsburg's dying declaration. Fuck him. Of course, his own father had no dying declaration to make because his own father had no mind with which to make it. That's how bad that is. And just as was the case with Ronald Reagan, when it comes Donald J. Trump's time, given the fact that his father died of Alzheimer's, there's every chance in the world that, like Reagan before him, he will be the only person in America who doesn't know that Donald Trump was once president of the United States. And that's a shame. Because if we can muster the necessary energy, and if we can bring about the change we so desperately need, I want for Donald J. Trump. The J stands for Jagoff. Hi, Gary. I want him to watch his entire legacy pitched into a cesspool where it belongs. Disgusting. As Adam Schiff said, this is low, even for you. No, I didn't write Ruth Bader Ginsburg's dying wish to a nation she served so well, spent her whole life making a more perfect union, but I'm going to fight like hell to make it come true. No confirmation before inauguration. Rob Reiner pointing out to call Justice Ginsburg's dying wish that her seat not be filled until after the election a Democratic hoax is abhorrent. There is no other way to say this. The President of the United States is an evil prick. Yeah, that for Rob Reiner. Former Clinton spokesperson Joe Lockhart said state TV Fox News now agrees that Ginsburg's dying wish was a Democratic hoax cooked up by Adam Schiff. You're worse than Trump because you have a choice. You certainly are not journalists by any definition. But just a reminder, there's no basement. There's no bottom. And as Flavio reminds us, NPR's Nina Totenberg was in the room when RBG expressed her wish. She was there. She heard Ruth Bader Ginsburg say that in her own voice. And so once again, I realize it's like a grain of sand falling upon a dune. But once again, we have yet another blatant lie to add to the series of lies that is the pseudo-presidency of Donald fucking Trump. Hey, big thank yous. It's possible we're going to knock this thing out. Thank you to Herbert. Herbert, thank you tremendously. We are down to $60 to go. Just $60 to go on Larry in Liberalville's hoist. Hoist a toast to RBG challenge. Thank you again to Larry. Thank you, Herbert. Thank you profoundly and tremendously. And this is more than I dared hope. Of course. There was more than just the sliming. Oh, wait, I got it right? Really, Lee? Tzadik, you said it fine, says Lee in New York. The word begins with the TZ as in matzah and bar bat mitzvah, and the term is used correctly. With an article from the Jerusalem Post, Ginsburg's death on Rosh Hashanah is significant for some Jewish Americans. But here's the other aspect. Jews bury quickly, but Jews cannot be buried on the Sabbath or holidays. My grandmother could not be buried until 4 days after she passed because of that. Today is the first day that Ruth Bader Ginsburg could be buried. Simply, they could not wait until she got buried. Trump and the rest of the scumbags, they could not wait until she was in the ground. No surprise there. Suppose not, but when it comes to odious, oh, for heaven's sakes. Enter Doug. Mouth full of collards, Collins. It is as though there's some sort of a sickening competition among this maggot scum. And remember, of course, that when again, the same applies to his followers as applies to him. when it comes to his followers, there's no bottom. None whatsoever. And so Doug, mouthful of collards, Collins, could not resist running immediately to the Twitter to make sure everybody understood just how utterly disgusting, how thoroughly revolting he is. Oh, yeah. Yeah, would anyone care to guess just how revolting Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins is? Anybody? Bueller? Bueller? No? Not surprising, really. Because it's hard to get into that sick a mind space when it comes to maggots, because it's bad. It's bad for your own mental health. It's not helpful when you get into that mindset. It's kind of hard to crawl out of it. But nonetheless, dear God, this is especially disgusting. You know, when things are particularly ridiculous or obscenely absurd, we have the hockey puck rule. Well, this isn't get the hockey puck. This is, oh, I don't know, get a 5-gallon drum or something. The hockey puck, you could. Well, you might choke, because this is this is putrid in its truest sense of the word. Again, and remember, please, Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins is not only a Christian, he's also a minister of the gospel. Oh, shit. And so, just as I warned Friday evening to just turn off your TV, leave the internet alone, don't read any news for a while, we'll deal with it on Monday. Well, here we are. I mean, I had to go over and get tires today, and imagine my surprise when I found that even at a Walmart in West Virginia, the flag had been lowered to half staff in honor of her memory. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people gathered in front of the Supreme Court Friday night, with the news of her passing. And since they were mostly liberals and progressives, guess what? They were all wearing masks. How's about that? But not Doug Collins. Not Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins. Not good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian minister, Doug Mouth. No, 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 no! No! Doug Collins took to Twitter to declare the following. And understand, there's a reason he tweeted what he did. Because he's locked in a heated contest with Kelly Loeffler. You remember old Kells, right? Kells was the one who dumped stock even as the market was about to tank because her husband is the head of the New York Stock Exchange and probably had a little inside information. But it's apparently legal for members of the United States Senate to do that. And he's got to out wing nut. He's got to out obscenity Kelly Loeffler. And remember, she was appointed because she was a moderate. She's a moderate. And now she has declared, in a desperate effort to retain her Senate seat, she has bragged in a new campaign ad, and I'm not kidding. Well, let's just go to the audio, shall we?
Did you know Kelly Loeffler was ranked the most conservative senator in America?
Yep, she's more conservative than Attila the Hun.
Fight China. Got it. Attack big government.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminate the liberal scribes.
More conservative than Attila the Hun.
Uh-oh.
Kelly Loeffler, 100% Trump voting record.
I'm Kelly Loeffler. I approve this message.
Really? More conservative than Attila the Hun? Somebody check the history. Could I get a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation ad hoc research committee to get on this? First of all, they use a white guy with a bunch of dirt on his face to play Attila the Hun. And I'm pretty sure the Huns were Asiatic. Okay. And by the way, if you're on the phone, stand by. We'll get there in a minute. They swept out of Central Asia and into Europe. And along the way, sacked Rome. And in fact, when Attila died, no one to this day knows where he was buried. Because the people who had created his tomb, which apparently I read some fictional account one time, was presumed to be, they built a cofferdam and dried up a portion of a river, diverted it, built his tomb in the riverbed, buried him in there, buried the people who built the tomb, the theory being that they put a bunch of wealth and gold and riches and stuff in there to carry him into the afterlife. Killed the people who built the tomb, threw them in there with him, closed up the tomb, broke the cofferdam and reflooded and sent the river back to its proper course. But that was probably fiction. So this is and Attila the Hun was notorious for slaughtering innocent people. Well, that kind of fits the description of every mass-cold COVIDiot Republican in the Senate and the House, doesn't it? Not to mention, well, the head maggot himself. But she's saying this because she's trying to survive against Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins, who gave up his House seat and his ranking position on House Judiciary, because not only is he a preacher, he's a lawyer from some draw spunky school of law. And she has to show to the necks and the maggots in Georgia just how rotten of a human being she is. Attila the Hun, by the way, killed his own brother so that he could take an absolute grasp on power. And she was appointed to appeal to suburban women in the suburbs of Atlanta. You know, the Scarlett O'Haras of the last year of the second decade of the 21st century. Don't start. And so she's trying to make sure that Georgians understand how her conservative family values. But if the comparison is with Attila the Hun, then those conservative family values are, you know, fucking murder. So you got two people, Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins and Kelly Loeffler, who are trying to run to the right of Attila the Hun. This actually is a good thing. Because there is a Democrat running for the seat. And here's where it gets weirder. And in fact, our buddy Steve from Georgistan gave us a little primer on this a couple of months back. Even after this election, there's going to be a runoff. If neither one of the if no candidate gets more than 50% of the vote. And so the other candidate, the Democratic candidate, just may have a fighting chance to push the Reverend, another Reverend, but maybe this one a decent one, Raphael Warnock, who is the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church. It's possible that all of this, this running to the right, may create a space in which Reverend Warnock has a fighting chance. But, of course, we're talking about Southern Democrats here who are something less than organized. And so there's a passel of other Democrats also running for the seat. And as of, 12 minutes ago, they're saying, no, hell, we're not gonna drop out and give him a chance. We're going to split the fucking vote. Because, well, some of them may be there exactly to do that. The former mayor of Columbus, Georgia, Teresa Tomlinson, has said, as things really hang in the balance with the death of Justice Ginsburg and everything else going on in the country, we have to field a unified candidate for Democrats to vote on and believe in. But there's a newbie out there named Matt Lieberman and former state senator Ed Tarver, and they're both saying, nope, staying in. Even Lieberman's own Facebook page is full of people saying, please, for the love of everything sacred or precious, drop out. Drop out for the good of humanity. You can only help a Republican get elected. And Ms. Tomlinson also said, we need Ed Tarver, who's a dear friend who I respect, to call on his supporters to support Raphael Warnock. And Matt Lieberman needs to do the same. And in case you were wondering, the Matt Lieberman who won't fucking get out, guess who that is? Well, the toxic oleander doesn't fall far from the toxic oleander bush. You may recognize the last name. Matt Lieberman, who is clearly nowhere near Raphael Warnock, Matt Lieberman is the son of the disgusting, odious Joe Lieberman. Holy Joe Lieberman. So that should tell you something about the character of Matt Lieberman. So as a nation grieved, and people in fragile circumstances trembled in fear, the LGBTQ community, women, people who care about the ability of this planet to support human life, marginalized peoples everywhere, the indigenous communities of this country, communities of color far and wide, as they all sat and worried and feared what would come next, well, Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins took to Twitter, and he said, RIP to the more than 30 million innocent babies that have been murdered during the decades that Ruth Bader Ginsburg defended pro-abortion laws. With Donald Trump nominating a replacement that values human life, generations of unborn children have a chance to live. Bullshit. He's the kind of guy that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, referred to as a member of a generation of vipers. A whited sepulcher, clean and pure on the outside and full of death and corruption within. There's no bottom. Honest to God, there is no bottom with this bunch. Double check it. Billable Rick says, contrary to popular belief, Doug Collins apparently isn't a lawyer. He got a BA in poli-sci and criminal justice, but I read somewhere, Billable, that he went to some draw spunky school of law somewhere. Might want to dig a little deeper. Yep. Went to and graduated from law school. I knew I was right. Graduated from Atlanta's John Marshall Law School and established his own legal practice. Jesus Christ, wouldn't you hate to have that fucker for a lawyer? Of course, I'm sure he didn't practice the kind of law that requires actually caring about poor people or people oppressed or harried by the law. Now, he seems like the kind of scumbucket lawyer who would set up a bill collection firm. Yeah. Meanwhile, those 30 million innocent babies who weren't babies, they were fetuses. Who he claimed were killed, murdered. By the way, a reminder, in the land of the law, you can't murder a non-human and a fetus until it is viable, until it is outside the womb, breathing on its own, ain't a human being. That's just science. That's not philosophy. It's just science. Jesus, he's disgusting. But there's no surprise in that. And he has been roundly denounced, but he has no shame. He has no conscience. He has no morals. He has no ethics. Scott Dworkin over at the Democratic Coalition said, Doug Collins is celebrating the death of a Supreme Court justice. Unforgivable. RBG deserves better than this garbage. And added, after seeing these hideous GOP responses to RBG's death, it's clearer than ever this is the most important election of our lives. Florida State Representative Anna Escamani said, that moment when you're so pro-life, you celebrate someone's death. Well, but see what Ms. Escamani doesn't understand, though, is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a Jew. That's the Lewis Black pronunciation, by the way. And, of course, in the faith and tradition of sickening freaks like Doug Collins, she went straight to hell. Because, you know, the Jews killed Christ, and they wouldn't accept Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. On the other hand, a woman who is a member of the Georgia legislature, Carolyn Bordeaux, she said, this is not Georgia. This is wrong and despicable. Our country and our state will reject you and your politics this year. There's only one problem with what she said. That is Georgia. Anytime something loathsome happens, anytime some godforsaken Republican says something awful and rotten and disgusting, and one of our side says, well, this is not who we are. Yes, it is. It is who they are. We cannot afford to give them cover, not another second, ever, ever, ever again. That is who the Republicans in Georgia are. And the only way to disprove that is to make sure that neither Kelly Loeffler nor Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins ever enters the Senate of the United States of America. And Lee in New York pointing out, what? A Lieberman messing up an election? I'm not surprised Joe Lieberman did a promo for Susan Collins. Billable Rick says, would it surprise me, you, if I told you that Doug Collins was a Baptist preacher? No, Billable, it wouldn't, because I mentioned that right off the bat. He's a gospel sharp. He can smell a chicken frying from 50 statute miles away. Yeah. Merciful heavens. And we're making steady progress on the hoist a toast to RBG challenge from Larry in Liberalville. Jeremy just jumped back in and took us down to $55. And I got a note from Les, and Les says, only $40 to go now. That's actually $35. Thank you, Les. $35 away. That's amazing. Thanks, everybody. I think we're about to have us some fundraising free radio for, my God, what is it? How many broadcast days do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, we're about to have a full week of fundraising free radio. That just thrills me to pieces. So thank you, Les. And thank you, Jeremy. Okay. Darlene has been waiting patiently, and we have reached the halfway mark of this Morian Monday. Darlene's been waiting patiently, so let me bring her on. Hey, Darlene.
Hey, my friend. How you doing?
Yeah, I think I've gotten over my crankies. Or not.
I don't know where to begin. Just to paraphrase, and it will be a bad paraphrasing of our dear Ruth, of the dear belated Ruth Bader Ginsburg, vis-a-vis Doug Collins. I think she had said, brethren, take, you know, get your foot off our necks. Get your foot off our necks. You know, in terms of how men and women, how men treat women.
Yes.
And you know, get your foot off our necks. And I apologize to the horn community and to the United States of America and the law and the world in general for, as a Connecticut resident imposing, the likes of, the Liebermans onto all of you.
now, Darlene, did you ever cast a, not counting the 2000 presidential election, did you ever actually vote for him?
I don't remember. And I know it sounds awful. But I don't think so. I know I definitely did not vote for him when he was primaried by our now Governor Ned Lamont. I went with Lamont for sure, who won the primary. This was back during the George W. Bush administration. And our now Governor Ned Lamont was running on, going against the Iraq war. And Lieberman lost the primary
right
to Lamont. So then Lieberman formed his own party, the Connecticut Independent Party or something like that, and wound up winning. Because he was such a shit that he couldn't take the fact that he lost the primary. But what was really depressing was many of our local representatives who claimed to be Democrats supported his move. Because, oh, you never know. And that was unacceptable to me. He lost the primary, he should have bowed out. So, I don't remember, but I probably did. I mea culpa. Again, I can't specifically remember doing that, but I probably did.
Yeah,
I just don't remember though. I cannot. And I know that sounds like a very lame response. And
that's okay. That's like me. I mean, I've got a long history of not casting a vote for Joe Manchin, but I have a couple of times. I don't feel good about it, but there was at least a politically expedient reason for doing
it. Oh, yeah, and I did the same thing with my local Republican first electman. I did it in the last year because it meant the possibilities of having an economic development commission, which this town desperately needs, and that wound up, you know, crashing and burning. So it's always like you vote for a Republican at your peril. If I might, again, I just don't know where to begin when it comes to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but if I might make a friendly correction,
what did I screw up? What did I screw up? Come on. It's okay.
Okay. It's just a familial connection or relation. But you're correct. Nina Totenberg was there, I guess, when Ruth, made her statement, but it was actually, she dictated her statement, that, quote, my most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed, unquote, which is remarkable in and of itself that she would actually say that. That is so remarkable, I would think.
Yeah, I agree.
She said it to her granddaughter, Clara Spira, not to her niece, but to her granddaughter. And I've seen this in a couple of places. Clara is a lawyer. So let's hope that Clara will speak out. But she said that to, and to me, you know, I think it just lends credence to what you've been saying all along, that this poor woman, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, was desperately hanging on. She was trying to hang on until Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were installed, you know, next year. And the poor thing just couldn't do it. And
but God almighty, the spirit and the will and the drive that got her this far
is unbelievable. And it's interesting you would use the word spirit, because over the weekend, and I didn't take your advice. But
you're one of the ones I knew wouldn't.
But it's qualified. But just to get to the spirit thing, my dear friend from Canada called me. We FaceTimed. She's Jewish. She's in part Jewish, and she said that. And again, taking from other things, and I want to apologize to the Horn listeners that are Jewish, because I'm being educated about this as a recovering Catholic, which I will be for the rest of my life. We tend to Christianize everything, and apparently even saying rest in peace is a problem. That's not what people, that's not what Jews say.
May her memory be for a blessing.
And my Jewish friend said that the fact that she died on the most holy, or quote unquote holy, and she was talking to, in my Christian, and her parents were a mix, so I think she was kind of trying to say it in terms that were understandable to me. So it's not meant to be an insult, but it was just so understandable to me. The fact that she died on the first day, apparently that is equivalent to to sainthood, to a saint.
Yeah, tzaddik.
That's the tzaddik. The tzaddik, with the T, silent T and the Z, I think you said.
Yeah, T-Z-A-D-I-K.
Amazing.
The T isn't really silent. It's very definitely there. Tzaddik.
It's very subtle. Tzaddik. It's a beautiful word. It's a beautiful word. And it's very fitting. I didn't listen to you. I was depressed. I mean, what can I say? I mean, I've been told that I look like her when I wear my hair up in a bun or a ponytail. I've had people approach me and say, you look a lot like RBG.
Whoa.
And I've been told that I look Jewish. Now, that is not my, a knowledge that I have that background. I have to do a 23andMe and see if anything sheds light on that. But I've been told by people who are Jewish, you look Jewish. And I've had people say, you certainly have the schnoz for it. Thanks. I've had one woman say, you look like a European Jew. Who are Jewish? These are individuals who are Jewish. So she's always held like just this special little place in my heart. And although I just was so saddened, because I thought she had been appointed by President Clinton, and you could look at every president and say, yep, that was a good appointment. I thought for some reason she had been appointed when I was still in law school, but it was actually after I graduated, I think it was in 1993, that she was appointed by Bill Clinton. And what set her apart was that, she would take on cases where men were being discriminated against. And she would argue those cases about discrimination against men. And she was arguing those cases as a woman. So by doing that kind of juxtaposition, that kind of dichotomy, she was more or less illustrating that if you're going to discriminate against men in these various cases, then what about women? You can't do that for women, too. So her approach, maybe it was when she was with the ACLU, was brilliant. It was just brilliant. And if you think about it, her rise through the ranks to eventually become a United States Supreme Court justice was meteoric. It was. It was fast. It was meteoric. It was amazing.
And there's another thing that makes her appointment special too, Darlene, and that is what the nature of her career was. When you look at people as far back as that old junkie Rehnquist, he came up through governmental structures, and Kagan and Sotomayor came up through governmental structures. One of the things I think that made Ruth Bader Ginsburg so especially effective and especially empathetic was the fact that she came up through organizations that dealt with the real world problems of human beings up against the law. She actually lawyered. She didn't sit around in some law library pondering the finer points of just what the mathematical mathematical definition was of a scintilla juris. You see what I'm saying?
Like Sonia Sotomayor. I mean, she was in the trenches.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously Ruth Bader Ginsburg came up really, I mean, talk about the trenches. She was, it's even times 10 as one of the very few women or female law students at Columbia. I mean, she paved the way for women like me to go to law school. And she just had a confidence and a stability. And if you look back over, and I cringe a bit, I think about, you know, I know Joe Biden is like, well, I was honored to preside over her confirmation hearings. I'm like, cringe, you know, when I think about how he presided over the Anita Hill hearings. But she just had just a presentation that was so assured, secure, and reassuring. Like, this was someone that didn't question her perspective on things, and she's like, I don't know, there's a part of me that's like, I didn't appreciate her enough. I mean, I you know what I was looking at over the weekend, again, I took your recommendation to heart in part, but I was just looking, I was reading about things about her, you know, just reading about articles that just
opposed to watching the right wing gloat. Yeah.
Right. And I needed to do that just because I just felt like it was like such a, like a personal, I never met this lady, but, I needed that comfort in reading that. I felt like it was honoring her to remind myself and read up on this.
Yes.
On what she did and what she accomplished. And again, this poor thing tried to hang on. You were right. She was hoping to outlast Trump. Donald. And I think I think that's why she.
If I could just point something out, how to put this? If she couldn't make it past an inauguration of Joe Biden, then she could not have chosen a better time for this awful thing to come to pass. Because this puts the Republicans in a horrible bind. And, you know, and what they're trying to do, Darlene, is brazen their way through it.
I think they're gonna do it, Bob. I think we're gonna be in a situation where,
well, you've got
seen this story.
You've got two members of the United States Senate, curiously, women, both already. And for obviously political reasons, you've got a noted Republican moderate Susan Collins.
That's a problem.
Who says that?
We've seen this story before, Bob. And Lisa Murkowski is not up for re-election, so we know we've seen this before. It ain't going to matter whether or not she wins.
Well, but
two men that are really controlling, Bob.
But where Lisa Murkowski is concerned, you got to remember that she marched right up to the podium and voted no on killing the Affordable Care Act. I mean, I'm no fan. That woman would happily see Appalachia blown to smithereens by mountaintop removal, and I harbor fantastic illusions about that. But she did cross Trump. She apparently doesn't much think much of him. And Susan, you know, I said early on, so I think Steve from New York posted about it in the Horn chat or in the Horn Facebook page, and I said the only reason Susan Collins announced that is she had been given permission by Chinless Mitch to do so, and I stand by that. But Lisa Murkowski then jumped in, and you're right, Willard Romney is out there, but that just gets us to 50. They got to find one more. I guess they got to get five, because you got to get over Pence being able to break ties.
Well, I couldn't, something happened on the stress line and you blanked out, so I couldn't hear when you were talking about Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. I guess that Lisa Murkowski is afraid of Mitch McConnell, I mean, ultimately, and she will.
That's what maybe you missed out, Darlene. She wasn't so afraid of Mitch McConnell that she wouldn't vote against destroying the ACA. She stood right there and voted against overturning the ACA alongside John McCain.
And Mitch McConnell was for the ACA?
No, he was for overturning it.
Right. So she voted against that. Okay, but don't forget during the impeachment, she Donald Trump's impeachment, she was all for impeaching him and blah, 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 until, in her view, the Democrats did something that ticked her off.
It
was bullshit.
Yeah,
and
it was probably when, I think if I'm, unless I'm mistaken, it was when Schiff pointed out that the Republican senators had been threatened with retribution. I think that was that moment.
And it was just a bullshit faux excuse for her to reverse her position, because, and I think even you said it, when Mitch came knocking, she completely knuckled under. Now, the situation, and it may flip around, the situation with Susan Collins is a bit different, because she is in a very precarious position in Maine. But again, if you look at her history, you know, she always eventually knuckles under and votes extreme right wing. But I'm actually heartened to hear you arguing against me on this. Do you think? Because, I mean, do you think that they will be prevented from doing this? Because, you know, already Chuck Schumer is coming out sounding like the weak asshole that he is, because he's like, well, they should. He used the word should. I was really troubled.
Oh, it's, that. Yeah, but it's
should. And now he's saying it's despicable. And Nancy Pelosi is bluffing. I think she's bluffing. I'm sorry. She's like, well, we have some arrows in our quiver. I don't want to discuss this right now. And I'm just like, she's got nothing. That was just, you know, I think she's desperate as well, and I feel like she's trying to throw something up and see if anything sticks. But the House has no real
except for impeachment.
Gumming up the works with impeachment, right? And
remember, I realize this is probably miles and miles and miles away from reality, but there are credible charges of perjury that can be brought against John Roberts, against Samuel Alito. They could impeach.
Mm-hmm.
They could impeach Clarence Thomas for sexual abuse.
Well, I mean, that's why I would love to see Anita Hill get it again. Appointed to the Supreme Court. That's a whole other story. Yeah.
All of those things would be politically dangerous. What I worry about, though, you know, you said Chuck Schumer is sounding like his typically wimpy self. Well, when it comes to milquetoast, Darlene, no one Tim Kaine takes a back seat to no one. Remember Tim?
Oh, God. Oh, you're saying Hillary Clinton's VP.
Yeah. So Hallie Jackson interviewed him on MSNBC, and
what about your senator, Bob?
Oh, we'll get to him in a minute. But this is just, I mean, this puts Joe Manchin, this makes Joe Manchin look downright butch.
We can't rely on the Democrats.
Tim Kaine asked by Hallie Jackson if he would support an impeachment move. He said, foolish idea. I can't see virtually any Senate Democrat agreeing with it. And Hallie Jackson responded, okay, so that seems off the table. And she said, well, what about the idea of if you win a Senate majority next year and the Republicans do get this nomination through, adding more seats to the Supreme Court? Well, I'm not playing an if game. What I'm doing is asking Republicans to be true to their word. We urged them in 2016, look, let's have a normal process on Merrick Garland. You can vote yes or no. We don't know whether he'll get the votes, and if they decided that they would announce a brand new rule. So I'm just asking, are there four Republicans that are willing to keep their word to the American public? We shouldn't be pursuing action on any nominee until after Inauguration Day. So he's actually thinking, oh my God, that Republicans are going to behave like, wait for it, decent human beings.
So let me ask you this. In terms of strategy, and I'm sure Steve from New York will probably come up with something to shoot this down. But you mentioned it before in your initial. Oftentimes, how we initially react is usually oftentimes the right thing.
We get a lot more right than we get wrong here, Darlene.
Oh, you better believe it, baby. We do. When you first announced it, because I heard it first on your program, and that'll be like, to me, I'll always remember that when I heard about the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I was looking, I was like really rummaging through Apple News, like, where the hell is this story? Where is it? In the first place, I saw Raw Story broke the story from what I saw. Your initial reaction was, and I don't know if it was a response to Billable Rick, but you had said the Democrats need to walk. You know, Chuck Schumer needs to, you know, grow some and tell his entire caucus they need to walk. And I'm kind of thinking, like, that's it. Because to me, if they can get the entire Democratic caucus or all of the Democratic senators to not participate in the hearings that they're going to try to ram through, that to me would seem to be a strategy wherein the Democrats can say Biden, Kamala, and I'll get to Kamala in a second, Schumer, Nancy, all of them can say this appointment's not legitimate. We did not participate. It is not legitimate. Based on what McConnell did in 2016, go ahead and appoint that individual. The moment we take, and again, it depends on taking the Senate and the presidency, we will impeach that individual. Because if you think about it, and I saw this in an article from some, I don't know who the hell it was that wrote it. Maybe I can't remember, her name escapes me, but it was a brilliant point. The Republicans, with ignoring Merrick Garland in 2016, with their not, and again, this also goes back to where Obama fucked up. By not taking up Merrick Garland's nomination, in essence, the Republicans gave Donald Trump not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 years of Supreme Court appointments. It stretched beyond the term
of his presidency.
Of a president. Of his fucking presidency. Trump got 5 fucking years. They have to pay for this. They cannot be permitted to get away with this. And the problem is that, and I saw this other article. Okay. I admit I was reading beyond just the great things about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but, where was I going with this? I lost my train of thought because I got a message, from my sister, but,
Well, let's take a moment here. Let's take a moment here, Darlene. Let me extend a couple of thank yous. Thank you very kindly to Elizabeth.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And thank you very kindly to Pat. We are, as amazing as it may seem, done with Larry and Liberalville's $750 hoist a toast to RBG challenge.
Awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. Thank you. That's awesome. That's what I remembered what I wanted to say. Obama is put in the whacked out weird position. And when I was reading these various articles, again, beyond just the wonderful things that RBG did, Obama was put in a very awkward position, as the Democrats are in general. And this is a brilliant point. Of, in a sense, justifying or codifying or giving credence to Mitch McConnell's bullshit rule that you can't appoint a Supreme Court justice in an election year. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that. Obama was totally 100,000% within his rights 10 months or more leading into 2016 election to appoint someone to replace Scalia.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, something.
Now we're put in this, Bob, we're put in this position now where we're having, well, you can't do it, Mitch, because of what you said, because of the rule you laid down. So we're giving credence to this rule.
Right, we are allowing him to change the rules.
We're fucking allowing it. And then what does he do? He moves the goalpost. He moves the goalpost.
Right,
he
and there is no
the fucking right,
and,
rule.
And there's no
sorry, I'm there, not yelling at you.
No, that's okay. But there's no better example of that than Lindsey Graham, who told Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic in an interview in 2016. Well. If Donald Trump's presidency and a vacancy comes open and we've already started the primaries, I want you to hold me to my word. We will not have hearings on that nominee.
Right, and you know
and,
what?
And of course,
whoever,
you know, it matters not a damn to him because, again, they're a gang of liars and hypocrites.
Exactly, and that is why whoever it was from the gay escort service, i.e. Lady G, now would be a good time for them to bring out Lindsey Graham's proclivities for whatever it is he does with the gay escort services just to show his hypocrisy. Now would be a good time.
You want to be a hypocrite?
Throwing it out to the big universe.
Right. You want to be a bit.
Throwing it out to the universe.
You want to be a hypocrite? Here, let's talk about what kind of a hypocrite Lindsey is. Yes.
And you know what? Maybe they will, Bob, and I know you've thought of that. Because maybe they will because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was pretty good on the rights of gays and gay marriage rights and everything else. The video, the videos that I've seen were so poignant of people gathering in front of the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court on Friday night. And there were gay flags flying there. People brought them. They were lighting candles and they had, I mean, it was instantaneous. That was pretty amazing. They're estimating about 1,000 people showed up probably within an hour or two of the announcement of her passing. They've got to be thinking about this. I mean, when you announced it on Friday on the front porch, I immediately texted my progressive friend down the street. She called me right away. I texted my gay friend, a young fella who was like, his situation is dire as well. As a young gay male, he's like, I can't take this anymore. I cannot take this anymore. Maybe, whoever those escort services are, whoever that individual is or individuals, maybe they'll speak up and point out the hypocrisy of Lindsey Graham. So, anyway, I don't know. I feel like, I'm not saying I'm giving up, but I feel like, please tell me I'm wrong, but I feel like, you know, they're going to ram through this appointment and they're going to put some crap.
They're going to try.
They're going to do it.
They're going to try, but see, you got to understand.
Some hope.
You got to understand that in order to do this, he's got to have Cory Gardner's vote. And Cory Gardner is in trouble in Colorado. And if he does this, he may lose Cory Gardner because there are more decent people than maggots in Colorado.
And it was something
and
that
Martha McSally
Kamala said.
And Martha McSally in Arizona is already losing sight of Mark Kelly. I mean, she's at the point of telling people to not eat so much food and send her the money. Okay. Steve Daines in Montana made statements every bit as hypocritical as those of Lindsey Graham. That's three. Lisa Murkowski is four. Susan Collins is five. It could very well do Lindsey in too, because look, I don't know who's trying to get through on the stress line, but I can't bring two people in on the stress line. So I'm sorry. I need some way to, but anyway, even with Lindsey, this could work to his detriment because, and just work with me while I process this through. He has said, he has done everything he has done after saying what he said about Donald Trump in 2015 and 2016, and he spoke the truth back then that he would could be the death of the Republican Party, that he was unfit to be the president, that he was a horrible human being. But South Carolina is so thoroughly maggot that he has to prostitute himself for all intents and purposes. And put the lie to his own core beliefs. Okay, this even works to his detriment because the maggots South, you know, those people in South Carolina, Darlene, you know, they're all about their honor. They ain't got much. South Carolina mostly ain't got a pot to piss in. It's dirt poor. Ain't hardly got paved roads. And flush toilet and flush toilets. I mean, the well to do, the ladies and gentlemen in Charleston and whatnot, you know, they're all right, but it's the same as it always was in the old South. You know, there's a very few people at the top eating the cream, and there's a whole lot of people lapping buttermilk at the bottom. So that chivalric culture of the old South they prize their honor. You know, they only fought, they only started the Civil War as a matter of honor. And so when you, and so when you see, and so if I, you know, if anybody, you know, you never know who's listening to this program. If anybody from the Jamie Harrison campaign is listening, this is how I'd play it. Look, I have a lot of differences of opinion with Lindsey Graham. We fundamentally differ on how to make lives, South Carolinian lives, better. And how to go forward and lift this state up. And that's okay. We'll have a referendum on that. But the one place where I, Jamie Harrison, differ from Lindsey Graham is that, like all of South Carolina, I believe that a man's word is his bond.
Ooh.
And I don't care if you disagree with me or not. I will always tell you the truth, and I will not be caught making a hypocrite of myself and making a bald-faced liar of myself by my own choice. I will not do that. I won't do it for you. I won't do it for myself, and I won't do it for anybody sitting in the White House.
That's beautiful. That's true. And I want to say that I'm not laughing at the situations you described in South Carolina about the dirt poor. That's not, I'm laughing at how you, your inflections and your accent, because I think it's dead on.
Oh, it's
it's real. And I want to say,
they sent children to die over honor.
And Lindsey Graham, okay, shoot me when I say this. I think Lindsey Graham could have been a great politician. I think he could have been a good, like, if he was on the right side of history, I think he could have been really good. I think that he, but he chose to take up the mantle of the classic sleazy ass politician. It's like when I look at Lindsey, I'm like, oh, what else is new? You know, this is what the sleazy, he's like a caricature. He's like the caricature. He chose to embrace that. He could have done so much better. And he chose not to.
Yeah, but he was this sleazy all the way back when he was in the House, okay? I remember the Clinton impeachment.
Okay. I'm not going to gainsay that. I guess there's a part of me that thinks, you know,
There's two ways he could
resurrect himself, but I guess not. You know, it's just,
you know, they've
got something on him, Bob. They've got something on him.
They've had something on him forever.
They must.
They've had something on him forever, and we know what the something is. But in the South, and perhaps in the North as well. And by the way, let me bring in Billable Rick to the conversation. He jumped in on Skype. So
Billable.
I'll finish this thought, and then we'll bring Billable Rick into it.
Okay.
In politics, if you're not a patrician, if you are a work your way up by the sweat of your own brow kind of politician, there's one of two ways to go. You either remain true to your roots and you come up as a pro-working people politician, and there are examples of that, and eventually there's politics involved, so there's going to be some sleazy and slimy and seediness, but you remain fundamentally true to your roots. Or you do the Lindsey Graham thing and you come up poor, but you know immediately who's asked to brown your own nose on. And that is the choice that he made, because he figured that there was no way in South Carolina, there's no working people's movement. There's no fucking unions to speak of there. So he began to bow and scrape and ingratiate himself to the power players in South Carolina. And that means being a conservative, a pro-business conservative. And he squeaked and grunted just enough to make the simpleton multimillionaires of the media say, well, he certainly seems authentic and a man of his convictions. Bullshit. He has never even so much as decided to go to the little senator's room without some fucking lobbyist telling him it was okay. And that's just who he is. Because I do. I remember how supercilious and sleazy he was during the Clinton impeachment. You know, back when he was excoriating Bill Clinton for a consensual oral sex event at the same time that his own Senate majority leader was banging his own intern like a cheap gong. Who, interestingly now, apparently has to gargle every time she gets there to go see Pope Frank. You know, Callista. with holy water, I might add. But I mean, that's just who he is. But Jamie Harrison has the best chance of anybody, and I think that's a good way to set himself apart. I will not sell you out. I will not sell my beliefs out. I will not sell my core principles out for anyone, not even the President of the United States.
And he's an African American, right?
Right.
He's good. Okay. Good. That's beautiful. I would agree. That's the way to play it.
So let's check in with Billable Rick. Great. Hey, Billable.
Hey, Billable. Hey, Billable. Hey, Billable, was that you on the stress line, or am I preventing someone else from getting on? But anyway.
Okay. Wrong button. Sorry. There's Billable.
Hey, can you hear me?
Hi, Billable.
Yeah, we got you.
Hi, Billable.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, darling, great call.
Hi, Billable.
Great call.
Oh, thank you, Billable. Were you the one trying to get on the stress line, or?
No, I knew better than to try to do that. I figured I'd try to just kind of.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
To hop up on the porch here, a mini front porch, or maybe a side porch, we'll call it.
Cool. Awesome. Go for it.
Side bar.
That works too amongst the attorneys, right?
Yes. Oh, exactly.
Not me.
Yes.
Not I, said the little red hand, but yeah.
Yeah. I sort of followed your.
You might as well have practiced, though, Bob.
Oh, I did practice.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah.
Oh, you did? I didn't know that. Okay. My apologies. I didn't know you. You had done that. Okay, cool.
I spent a lot of years shitting on poor people.
Really?
You got tired of it.
Oh, okay. You'll have to tell us about that story. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Rick. Well, go ahead.
I've been a G-man until recently, so there you go. Now I defend the poor taxpayers who are, you know, being, you know, vilified and prosecuted by the, you know, awesome power of the federal and state governments. But,
I did collections for a while, which I just hated. And yeah, I'm sorry to admit that, but I didn't last in it. I didn't like it.
For all of sin and come short of the glory of God, you know, that'll get you a couple of turns on the spit in hell, Darlene. But, you know, maybe not too many because you walk away.
It got me to walk away.
When I was attending UCLA, that was one of the jobs I had, you know, UCLA student loan collection. So I would call people and just try to see if they could, you know, pay their loans, try to get them to agree to payment plans, whatever. So it was kind of a soft sell. It wasn't a real hard ass kind of collection job. It was just, you know, part time. That's when the Challenger disaster happened when I was at work back in 86, I think. That was the job I had back then. But I sort of followed your approach this weekend, Darlene. I didn't watch any of the the big news programs, you know, like, you know, meet the prostitutes or anything like that. You know, I just sort of I read an article or two about, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and mainly focused on my golf game on Saturday. I shot a 96, first time I've broken 100 since I took up golfing again. After a 33-year lapse, which was cool. Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. We got a birdie. We got chip and birdies on hole number 9. My buddy, I got what's called a COVID birdie, which is where the ball, like, hits the flag and kind of drops down but kind of bounces up out of the cup, you know, because the cup's shorter, so you can't reach in and grab it. And mine was actually a bona fide chip in. But
holy crap, I didn't know that about the cup.
Yeah. There's like a little styrofoam thing about half the depth of the cup, so you don't reach down and, like, you know, because of COVID. That's why you have COVID holes in one, COVID pars.
I was not aware of this phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a bona fide.
They do that on purpose, party. Rick? Rick, do they do that on purpose, making the cup shorter so it bounces out?
The cup really? Is normally, what, is it 5 inches? Was it 6 inches deep? 5-6 inches deep? Now it's only like 2.5 inches.
Fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So if you hit something that you judge, if you and the flag doesn't come out, you can't pull the flag out either. Okay. So if you hit the flag and it goes in, then obviously it's always good. But if you hit the flag, if you hit it squarely and it bounces out, then you can give yourself, you know, not say it was in on account of COVID. At least that's what we do. And you know, it depends on how hot the shot is. If it's going fast and it hits the flag, you know, the pin, it probably wouldn't have gone in anyway. But we ended up finishing in the dark because we ran out of light. I only had like about not even 3 hours to play. The last three holes, we used glow balls, which is pretty cool. You know, my buddy had a flashlight and he had these, luminous balls, and he shined the light on it, and and that works pretty cool.
They have luminous golf balls? That's interesting.
Yeah, luminous golf balls. It's really funky when you're putting. You hit the ball and you see it like going towards the cup, you know. But that was a good time. But anyway, I watched the golf tournament on Sunday. Actually, Saturday and Sunday. Did some yard work, and I avoided the news on purpose because I didn't want to hear about that. And, I don't think that all hope is lost necessarily. I thought so at first on Friday, you know, and for the early part of the weekend. But then I listened to Randy Rhodes, and she actually persuaded me, I think, that, the Republicans, while they may get a vote on Trump's Supreme Court nomination, it probably won't be until after the election. And if they're resoundingly defeated after the election, the Republicans are going to be very wary about confirming a Supreme Court justice, knowing that, let's say, the president's going to be Biden and you got a Democratic majority in the Senate. And so if they confirm a justice over the wishes of the American people during the lame duck session, they're going to face a real serious possibility that the Democrats might expand the court to like 13 justices. You know, liberals have a 7-6 edge.
Can I just say that in what you're saying, Billable, is that and this struck me because Kamala Harris made a statement like it was one thing she said, and she just sounded so sure of that. She said, "We are nominating and appointing a black woman to the Supreme Court." She made that one statement. I remember, and it's sticking in my head. She's like, "We're appointing a black woman." And the problem is that Biden has been on the record and was questioned about this, but he didn't respond. Biden's on the record that he doesn't agree with expanding the Supreme Court. So my hope is that you know, the and I'm kind of liking the Biden Kamala contrast, because I'm thinking that Kamala can get in his ear and say, "You need to do this."
You mean kind of the way that Biden forced Obama into acknowledging marriage equality?
Absolutely. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Yes, and exactly, which was excellent. That's to Biden's credit, and I'm thinking that kind of tension there may be even a reason why he said, I want Kamala to be my VP, and maybe Obama had a little bit of a say in that, because Obama likes Kamala Harris. He's always liked her and says she's destined for, you know, the heights of the political firmament, so to speak.
Go ahead, darling. My point can wait.
Okay, I had a question for you, Billable, and Bob. And then, Bob, you probably brought this up and asked Billable this in the past. And my apologies, but and I hate to rehash stuff. Okay, it's over and done with. But it's something we bear witness to and that we can learn from. But back in 2020, 2016, when Obama appointed or nominated Merrick Garland. I remember Bob saying, look, the fact that McConnell turned around and said, no, we're not going to hear this on the floor. This is an election year, and all the bullshit that he spewed. Bob had said, well, then Obama is within his rights to say, here, Merrick, here is your robe. By not consenting, you've abdicated that. But by not holding the necessary hearings, you have abdicated your right to consent.
Well, and
here's your robe. Go ahead, walk over to the Supreme Court. You can sit on the bench, and John Roberts can do nothing about it. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, yeah. That was a brilliant suggestion Bob had back then. I thought, you know, that would have been
silence.
You know, so it could have worked.
It's Darlene, you had the same kind of class as I had, and Billable had, and Stephen New York had.
Mm-hmm. Constitutional law.
No, law contract. Yeah. Silence is acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And contracts, right.
Yeah.
Which is basically what the Constitution was based on.
Yeah.
Contracts.
Yeah. Well,
right?
the Charles Beard said back in what, 1916 or something, 1914, in his economic interpretation of the Constitution, you know, it's his contention that the entire reason for the Constitution's creation was to protect the business interest.
Right. The money.
Right.
Yep.
And at least at minimum, it would, you know, just to see Mitch McConnell pop his turtle cork would have been worth it right there, because it would have thrown everything into a tizzy. And how would the Senate have responded? How would Mitch McConnell have responded? Because he would have had an argument, but I think because we were in the midst of a presidential election, I think he was afraid of fucking up, excuse my French, Hillary's chances of being elected. But guess what? Didn't matter. It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It didn't. She lost. She won, but she lost.
His gamble paid off.
McConnell did, but maybe. But just maybe. Maybe. Just maybe. If Obama had done that and Hillary climbed on board and said, I'm 100% in support of this, who knows how many additional voters they could have siphoned off, and maybe they would have won. Maybe Hillary would have got enough of the popular vote to have overcome the Electoral College problem. Because it would have shown the Democrats have guts.
Yeah.
They have guts.
Oh, and by the way, going back to the argument that I put that I said that Jamie Harrison should make, just real quick, David in South Carolina, Stan, sent me a tweet from Jamie Harrison. My grandpa always said that a man's only as good as his word. Senator Graham, you've proven your word is worthless.
When was that done?
Today.
Excellent.
And when he says, Senator Graham, you've proven your word is worthless, you back up logically. What he's saying is that Senator Graham is worthless.
Yeah, of course.
That's beautiful.
Well, what he should have done is he should have included a link to the Lincoln Project ad about all the Republicans who were following the McConnell rule that a justice can't be confirmed in election year back in 2016 when it suited the Republicans' interests when there was a Democratic president. And now it's like somehow different, even though we're actually closer to an election. Instead of being the Garland nomination occurred – Fat Dead Tony died in February. The Garland nomination was in March. That was like 8 months.
Yeah, among other things.
Now it's only 2 months before the election.
Among other things, Barack Obama also waited until they got Fat Dead Tony corkscrewed into the dirt.
Yeah, right.
Well, see, and you know what?
This tortured logic, Bob, you know?
And maybe that's a maybe that's a Christian blessing for us. You know, I say the word blessing because I'm again, I saw this on TikTok. It was a black woman that was called out about saying rest in peace, RBG. And somebody who was Jewish said, well, wait a minute. That's not what we say. And she's like, hey, I'm totally fine with that. I learned, boom, we don't need to fight over this. This is totally cool. I learned about this.
You know, it's interesting. Lee in New York addressed that issue when you mentioned it earlier, Darlene. Non-Jews offering condolences, please share with Darlene, Lee says. Sincerity matters more than terminology. Also, sure. When instructed on what is proper for any situation, listen and learn. That's how respect is shown.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Thank you, Lee. Right. I'm 100% in agreement, and we're all learning, and we're still learning, because that's what makes this country so incredible, is the diversity. But maybe we're blessed, right. You know, and maybe we're blessed. I shouldn't say but, and maybe we're blessed, because at least I've always heard that people who are Jewish want to bury their dead right away. And maybe because it's Rosh Hashanah, as you said, Bob, we're blessed to be able to have her to lie in state Wednesday and Thursday, I think, or into Friday. I think Friday she's going to be in the state rotunda, in the rotunda, like John Lewis was a few months before. So, or back in August. And supposedly that's the pressure's been put on, because that's all we've got is public opinion and public pressure at this point, is that, you know, if you believe him, which you can't, you know, Trump is claiming that he'll hold off on announcing who his choice is going to be, some batshit crazy person, you know.
Let me just jump in real quick. Not some batshit crazy person, some batshit crazy woman.
Yeah,
okay, I know. I didn't want to say that because I'm a woman.
I know, but you know.
But yeah, it's going to be a batshit crazy woman.
Her first
woman.
Name is three exactly. letters, and her last name has seven letters in it. Okay, and she's got a funny middle name, kind of like Coney Island. Let's just say.
Well, okay? it may be her,
it's
but
it's going to be a batshit crazy woman.
Michelle
Bachman.
No, it may be that batshit crazy woman from Talibandiana, but the inside track is currently being occupied by a batshit crazy woman from Florida, Stan.
Oh, the Cuban American. Okay.
Right. And there's a hell of a
and there's a hell of a lot
better reason to appoint a batshit crazy Cuban woman from Florida, Stan. Sorry about the hiccups. It's the nicotine patches. Than there is to appoint somebody from a safe state.
That's true.
Exactly.
I mean, it gives more political bang for your buck, you know.
And personally, while the whole thing will be a horror show, the idea of the headline that reads Donald Trump appoints Florida woman to Supreme Court, well, that's comedy gold.
As opposed to Florida
and
man.
The hate. Well, so Rick, what do you think? Do you think that having all the Dems in the Senate, like Bob has suggested, walk off and say we're not going to participate in these hearings because they're illegitimate, hence whoever you nominate and appoint is illegitimate, and we could impeach that individual? Do you think that might be one angle that could work?
No, I don't think so. I think what you do is you need to draw it out as long as you can. And if the Democrats don't participate in the process at all, it'll be much easier for the Republicans to ramrod it through. So you have to participate.
Well, I know, but they
But
wouldn't this be poetic justice? Because the Republicans, again, they always have the upper hand. They refuse to hear Merrick Garland at all.
Yeah.
At all. Well, so how does that square with that?
And so the Democrats walking out mean that they would refuse to hear crazy Florida woman at all.
Right. And as far as the idea of impeaching a sitting justice, that's not going to happen. You got to get 67 votes.
No, you have to have 67 votes to convict.
Well, to convict. To impeach, Yeah, to impeach. I mean, so what? I mean, you know, if you're going to go after the king, cut the head off. Don't just bother to do an impeachment that you can't carry through. Although in Trump's case, I think it was incumbent on the Democrats to do that for history's sake.
Impeaching a sitting Supreme Court justice for perjury is pretty serious business.
Okay, that's true.
And if you can get the impeachment through, the Senate has to take it up unless Mitch McConnell wants to defecate on the Constitution some more.
Yeah, well, he's not going to call any witnesses in such a trial, as we know. That's the new rule. That's the McConnell rule. Basically, trial without witnesses. You know?
But
And you're thinking then, Bob, so you're thinking, Bob and Rick, that Nancy's, you know, arrows in the quiver, the word quiver just kind of wigged me out, but that's what she said. Arrows in the quiver.
Well, I give...
impeachment and impeachment only? What is she got up her sleeve? Just, or is she just bluffing?
Not just that. I know. I get a bunch of shit, Darlene, for saying that...
I'm getting worked up here. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I get a bunch of shit for saying that Nancy Pelosi is smarter than 99% of the people on the Hill. I fully recognize that she is decidedly not nearly ideologically pure enough for those of us who are so very, very ideologically pure.
She is definitely not a unicornian, Bob, okay?
But there's a lot of
things. Do you really think she's a progressive, though? Really, really a liberal? Really?
She certainly voted like one when she went into Congress.
I think she's a... Okay. She's a liberal pragmatist, is what I would call her.
You can't. The job.
I think there's a mutual respect between her and AOC. I think AOC really likes her. I think they really like each other, and I think AOC sees her value, and vice versa.
Like I said, she's smart. She's smarter than any man in the House of Representatives.
Yeah. Okay, well, no, you didn't say man, but I agree.
smarter than the vast majority of the women, and all of the Republican women, and AOC.
And AOC's.
I realize we worship at AOC's shrine, but she's still a freshman, and the job of speaker is nothing like the job of being a member.
Uh-huh.
As a member, you can go out there, advocate for your district, bring home the bacon, all of that stuff, and you can even make big national issues. But the speaker has to constantly be it's a constant chess match. And yes, it's 11D dimensional because you're dealing in this case with maggots on the other side who absolutely will not cooperate. And so you've constantly got to be putting them in check. Yeah. And it is a brutal job. And I don't know why anybody would want it, but she did, Nancy Pelosi did, because she damned well didn't want to just break the glass ceiling. She wanted to take a sledgehammer to it.
She's the best speaker we've had probably since Lyndon Johnson, Bob, most as far as effectiveness.
Was Lyndon Johnson Speaker of the House?
I believe he was.
I thought he was in the Senate. He became vice president as a senator. But anyway... To answer your question, Darlene, the House always has more at hand than you know impeachment in this case. Although it would be brutal. Just bear with me here. This may be totally crazy, but even the whisper of an impeachment of a sitting justice for perjury might get some phones picked up in the Supreme Court building and some calls made to Mitch McConnell's office. Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
Fascinating.
You're not going to get this body besmirched any more than it already is. Thank you.
And you know what, Bob, you raise a tremendous point because the Chief Justice John Roberts effect. I actually think that Chief Justice John Roberts truly, 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 really appreciated and liked Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think he really did.
And Ruth Bader Ginsburg adored Fat Dead Tony. And he adored her.
Exactly. I don't get it, but those personal relationships. And she, She even stuck up for Kavanaugh early on. She stuck up for him, which to me perplexes me. But okay, Ruth, you're closer to it than the rest of us.
Now let me add in one more piece of the puzzle. Before impeachment is ever even whispered of a sitting Supreme Court justice, what if Nancy places a call to old Balls and Strikes and says, nice little budget you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it.
Oh, she needs to do that. Oh,
the House always controls the purse strings.
Yes.
Hey, CJ, how do you feel about your service being fucking voluntary, bub?
All right, so Bob, you don't think she was bluffing?
You want to go back to working? Hey, CJ, you want to go back to working by candlelight, pal? Because we may just have enough in the budget to buy you a few boxes of fucking candles and maybe some whale oil lanterns. CJ, have you ever actually tried to take that little pen knife out and sharpen a turkey quill? Have you ever done that? Because I am fully prepared to make sure that every opinion of the Supreme Court is written out by Bartleby the goddamn Scrivener.
So billable, because you're still practicing. I practiced for 5 years, Bob. I don't know how long you practiced for, but
over 30.
I'm sorry, what?
Over 30 years.
Over 30 years billable. So, do you agree that Clara Spira, was she quoted from her grandma? Ruth Bader Ginsburg was extraordinary for a dying Supreme Court justice to say, you know, my fervent wish is that I'm paraphrasing that her replacement be appointed by the new president.
The newly installed president.
Isn't that extraordinary? I just think that's an extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think it's in part out of her desperation, because she so desperately was trying to survive.
Oh, Darlene, I'm not so sure it was desperation. I think she was playing the game to the very end, and mm-hmm. that's no disrespect intended.
Yeah,
no,
she was a lawyer to the end. And she ran a flag up the flagpole that everybody that people have to fucking salute and acknowledge.
To rally Democrats.
She is fucking brilliant she's so brilliant because you know what, Bob?
She was tough.
You know, Bob and
Bob and 5'1" and what, 100 pounds? 90 pounds? You know?
She was so amazing. You know, I posted it on my Facebook page because I just love the interaction between her and Stephen Colbert 2 years ago when she invited him to see her workout routine.
Oh, okay.
And it's hilarious. And
I'll
he was able
that.
To do it where he maintained, just check out, he maintained her respectability and he could be the goofball comedian that he was. And she was just, it was just precious to watch that. But like, she would have, it wasn't the cancer that took her. It was complications from the cancer that took her. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I would love to know what those complications were. Because
probably
if there
the
was
heart,
even
probably
a...
the heart, that's most common. The heart gives, the heart's
well,
damaged by...
Well, it was... Well, maybe I... You know what? I fucking hope so. Because if there was any COVID-19 involved in this...
No. I don't think so.
I would be...
Yeah, I doubt it.
That would pop my cork. But she would have survived. You know what? She kept fighting and fighting and fighting. She just needed a few more months. And it wasn't the cancer itself. It was the complications from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is just so mind-blowing.
Well, let me add in a note from Matt in San Francisco. Nancy Pelosi is his member of Congress. And so he should know. Subject line, smarter. smarter than any man in the House is a pretty low bar. And, well, any Republican man, that's no bar at all. On the other hand, your Adam Schiff's, I mean, I think he's a pretty formidable thinker, but still, Matt says, smarter than any man in the House is a pretty low bar. Nancy has kept closer to her core principles than most Congress people I can think of. And that is one of her constituents speaking.
That's awesome. Thank you. I can't gainsay that whatsoever.
Ron in Raleigh does
She's a strategist.
I get the idea that Ron in Raleigh wouldn't pee on Nancy if she was on fire. And he says, do you think the people of the California 12th should have some representation? Miss Nancy spending all her time being speaker, when does she have time to represent her constituents? Have you listened to anything Shahid Buttar has to say? Miss Nancy just made a deal with Steve Mnuchin where she got jack shit out of the deal. Well, the bottom line is, you know, it's not just Nancy sitting there with a quill pen and a knife and some and an ink pot and some parchment. She has a staff just like every other member of the House has staff, and she probably has twice as many. So it's not like the people of California's 12th are going begging. That needs to be taken into account.
Yeah. You're basically saying, like, Kamala represents multi-millions as opposed to somebody from, say, Oklahoma. You know, that in terms of the Senate being one of the most undemocratic institutions out there, and what has given Mitch McConnell his hook, and his ability to lie and say, well, we're representing the American people. No, you're not. Republicans represent far less, but they have more power.
Exactly that. And look at the numbers, Darlene and Billable. Depending on which poll you look at, something on the order of 79% of the American people want a woman's right to choose, a woman's constitutional right to choose. We tend to leave out that word, constitutional. It is every bit, a woman's right to choose is every bit as much a constitutional right as is the right to keep an armed bears, okay? As is the right not to quarter troops in your house, as is the right to a trial by a jury of your peers, or the right against self-incrimination, or the right to go to the place of worship of your choosing. Hallelujah, praise Jesus, amen. It's a constitutional right. And 79% around about of the American people think that a woman's constitutional right to choose should be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a shade of difference in numbers, is the same percentage of the American people that are represented by all the Republican senators is in the same neighborhood as the number of people who want to take a constitutional right away from the women of this country.
Yeah. And that's never
so that, I mean, that, t- that tells rights. You a lot. When Mitch McConnell says, we're going to have us a confirmation hearing, he's saying, on behalf of a tiny minority of this country, we are going to ram this nomination through despite the wishes of the vast majority of the American people.
And that's where that exemplifies how the system has been corrupted. It's just corrupt.
Well, it's the failure of the idea of the Senate. And no, let me take that back. It's not a failure of an idea, because the whole there was a lot of humbuggery in the way the framers talked about why they set the bicameral legislature up the way they did. With a populationally apportioned house that was supposed to be raucous and rowdy, and a sedate Senate that was supposed to be all gentlemanly-like, because we weren't going to let the hoi polloi pick them, remember? They were going to be appointed from people who could be...
Plate.
But the bottom line is, that's all blue smoke and mirrors, because the whole point of the entire system, and the only way they got it ratified, was to let the slave states lord it over everybody else, and it continues to this day.
We're like
Carl eight College. Of the first nine presidents from slave states, Bob. The only exception being Adams, right?
And part of the reason that Aaron Burr You know, he's been recast as our American Satan and everything, but he's not. Yeah. Part of the reason Aaron Burr didn't stand down in the election where it was him, Jefferson, and Adams, was because he was trying to stop the consolidation of power in the federal government in the hands of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And frankly, it might well have broken the back of that Virginia gang if a president could have come from New York instead of Virginia. Let's see here. I wanted to make sure I thanked Elizabeth, and I need to thank Pat for getting us down to zero on Larry from Liberalville's raise a toast to Ruth Bader Ginsburg challenge. So thank
awesome.
You, Pat.
And, awesome. Yeah,
we're done. We're done.
Oh my gosh! Awesome. Thank
you. 7+ days of fundraising free radio. 7+ days in September. The last.
Yes,
seven
all we'll be doing is thanking subscribers, and that's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
For 7 days?
Yeah.
For 7 days.
Wow.
This week and the 28th, 29th, and 30th.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very much so.
Thank you, Ruth, and all those.
And thank you, Larry in Liberalville.
Yeah, wow. Larry in Liberalville. Wow. And those who matched them. Wow.
So I guess I should be
a little bit more positively minded about this. Maybe there's a shot that we can.
I think so. I'd say there's about a 40% chance of the justice being confirmed before the election. Maybe 30% even, and maybe in the lame duck session, maybe 50% or 40%. So, I mean, there's a decent chance that the next president, hopefully Biden, will get to appoint the new Supreme Court justice. I mean, you never know. Weird stuff can happen in with regard to Supreme Court
nomination. And all of this, Nitwit Nero doubled down again today, saying, "I really don't think she said that."
Oh,
and it's time for her granddaughter to come out and look and have Nina Totenberg standing right next to her.
Yeah.
And look at the camera and say, "Listen, you orange menace. I was in the room. I heard her voice. I heard her say it. It was her dying declaration."
Well, they'll probably have them on CNN today, Bob. That's the way CNN is. They get the best guests a lot of times, you know? I find it, anyway.
And see, Jim Acosta, and again, this is political more than it is constitutional or procedural. Jim Acosta is reporting at CNN, "Selecting a new Supreme Court justice before the election could be risky for the president. A GOP source close to the process said some aides to the president and some Republican lawmakers worry that ramming through a new justice could backfire with voters, costing the party both the White House and the Senate at the same time. As this source put it, as much as Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is fixated on the Supreme Court, he cares about his majority in the Senate a lot more than that." And so again, the math. Martha McSally, way behind. Cory Gardner, deep trouble. Steve Daines, not even doing particularly well.
Yeah.
In keeping with the apprentice style, presentation of this administration. CNN is also reporting that Amy Coney Barrett, the front running candidate, met in person with the president at the White House today.
Oh, okay. Well,
and that's what CNN is reporting as the top story.
Well, that will not be the smart move. So that's probably the move he's going to make. The smart move is Florida woman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because he needs Florida a hell of a lot more than he needs Talibandiana, and there is not a snowball's chance in hell of Talibandiana going for Biden.
No, there isn't. Not even Northeast Indiana Northwest Indiana giving him the vote like Obama got. We forget Obama got Indiana in 2008. that election. That was a surprise.
Yeah.
By the thinnest margins.
But this is not then.
No,
And he thinks he's already a lock in Florida too. I don't know.
Hey, can we speculate on possible nominations for, let's say if Biden wins, if he gets to nominate a black woman, for example, I say Val Demings would be tremendous as a Supreme Court.
I don't know enough about the potential list.
Yeah,
but.
I think it'd be a lot like the VP list.
Yeah, historically speaking, way back when Abraham Lincoln was president, a Supreme Court vacancy came open, and that's when he put Salmon P. Chase on the court.
Uh-huh.
But he put Salmon P. Chase on the court because Salmon P. Chase was a pain in his ass, and was thinking about running in, I think, 1864.
Right.
If Biden wins, there would be nothing to stop him. And it might be a great move to put, if she would be willing to go, put Kamala Harris on the court.
I think she would jump at the chance, Bob.
But I think she also wants to be president, so no.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the reason Lincoln put Chase on there. That forecloses running for president, just period.
Although I get the sense she doesn't have the knives out for Biden, really. Not like Pence does for Trump. Anyway, I mean, I think she realizes in all likelihood, Biden may only be a one-term president, I mean, he may be exhausted.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, and it's kind of nice, as a woman, it's kind of nice to be able to say that, because we always hear this in reference to men, that basically for Kamala Harris, the world is her oyster. But also, this is something that CNN is saying, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg will become the first woman in history to lie in state in the U.S. Capitol.
Is that right?
Wow.
I'll be damned.
Wow.
It's about time.
It's like, holy shit. But it makes sense. She will be the first woman in history to actually lie. And you know what? You're right. You're right, Bill. When you think about it, it's like, that's right. When was the last time we ever saw a woman lying in state? Never.
Wow. I mean,
she'll be the first.
She may have been one of the first women to argue in front of the Supreme Court. I know she was the first woman to argue as many times as she did in front of the Supreme Court. Like, that was what she did. She was like a, Supreme Court, appellate specialist is what she was. She strategically picked cases where a man might be discriminated against, because to attract the empathy of the 9 male Supreme Court justices she was arguing in front of. So it's like, okay, this can cut both ways. It can hurt discriminating against men just as much as it can against women. And that was how
she established
that principle, basically.
Well, So just to get back to the practical considerations we're running out of time, but to the practical considerations of the timing of any sort of a nomination fight, Chinless Mitch is trying to brazen it through, like I said, but it's not nearly as easy for him as he's trying to make it look like.
No.
Because if this thing extends past the election, then the votes of Cory Gardner, Martha McSally, Susan Collins, Steve Daines, Lindsey Graham, who's already said what he's going to do, and Chinless Mitch himself becomes problematic. And as noted, that election fight in Georgia, if only Joe Lieberman's boy would get the fuck out of the way.
I'm sorry on behalf of Connecticut.
That little
I hope his name isn't Joe, at least, Bob. I hope it's not Joe Lieberman.
But to consider the whole process, it would be doing something to ram a nomination through before November 3rd.
That would be amazing, and that would also be chutzpah,
And if he does that, he may doom any number of GOP senators. And as you know, that, that White House staffer was worrying, fuck Trump and fuck the GOP Senate majority. There's that.
Yeah.
There's also the fact that if he waits around, then that may not work out anyway. And there's one more factor that has to be taken in, taken into account, and that's something that Brother Deacon Asa brought up, and you did too, Darlene, I think. You always have to find one extra Republican senator because you can't count on Joe Manchin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I'll see about him. Yeah.
Although, surprisingly, Bob, Joe Manchin voted pretty much the right way on all of the Trump nominations for cabinet positions. Am I right on that?
No, he voted also, he voted against Betsy DeVos.
Oh, that's all. Not against a lot of the others.
And he also, and Manchin also voted guilty on impeachment.
Right, and he also voted against Kavanaugh, did he not, and against Gorsuch?
No, he voted for Kavanaugh.
Oh, did he?
And I'm pretty sure he voted for Gorsuch, too.
Bob, how do you think he's going to weigh Virginia.
Well, I got a note from Jack in Shreveport way early this morning. I only saw it after I woke up. Apparently, they reached out and got Joe on way too early because they've I forget who it is they've stuck with that job. That's before Morning Joe, but supposedly she was interviewing Joe Manchin. I don't know what he said. Let me check real. Let me check the hot sheets just for a second here, and we'll maybe find out. If nothing else,
so that's the hot sheet for progressive talkers that you get secretly every day, Bob.
I get the liberal the liberal agenda.
Okay, I thought so.
No, don't give a goddamn about football. I'll quit it.
I'm just curious to see what your prediction is, Bob, about Joe Manchin and where he's going to come down on this.
It's a Supreme Court. Ramon. It's a Supreme Court nomination. So he would probably vote for the nominee, but today, where'd it go? There it is. No way. Nope, don't want that neither. Damn it. The bottom line is Joe Manchin said that he opposes having a vote on the nominee before the election. CBS Boston reporting Senator Manchin says Senate should not vote on nominee before November election. The latest via the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Manchin against high court vote before election. CBS Pittsburgh, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, Senate should not vote on Supreme Court nominee before November election. Via Yahoo, Senator Manchin, I hope we have enough decency to honor Justice Ginsburg until we lay her to rest. That story is two days ago. We should not vote on the nominee before the November election is today.
Okay.
Is that positive? I mean, based on his behavior in the past, which you know very well,
is he
word like that, or is it like a Susan no?
He's
Collins?
Not. It's not like he has any power to sway it. So it's easy for him to say no because he knows that Mitch McConnell can just steamroll him.
Yeah,
but you know what? The maggots have been heaping. They've been calling out and verbally assaulting Lisa Murkowski for coming out and saying, no, I'm not going to do this. So he could get some verbal backlash, I assume, from people in West Virginia.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But then again, But he's safe. He's going to be, listen, he is going to be senator as long as he wants to be senator.
Right. So people will forget.
Because because the Republicans can't put up a credible candidate against him. Yeah. And, well, primary challenges. Yeah, never
he's
mind.
Sort of he's sort of sui generis. He's sort of like, you know, he's like a master at triangulating West Virginia politics.
Well, the West Virginia Democratic Party, a long time ago, the West Virginia Democratic Party became moribund because it was turned into a cult of personality for Joe Manchin.
Right.
But anyway, we're out of time, but it's been a great conversation. Yeah. Thanks for getting it going like you did, Darlene, and thanks for jumping in, Billable Rick.
Thanks, Billable, and you know what? We criticize former President Bill Clinton for a shit ton of stuff, but I'll tell you, he made a damn good choice.
He got
nominated
that.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg for the Supreme Court.
Oh, he got that. Good for him. He got that right in 24 karat gold.
Yeah, for sure.
He did. Yeah. He did.
Well, thanks,
awesome
y'all.
Awesome conversation. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Billable. Good to talk with you.
You take care. Thanks,
you
Bob.
Too. I'm going to hang up. Thanks.
Oh,
and by
the way, Darlene, when we do get a minute, I was thinking about you and your barbecue issue earlier today. I saw a couple of things. We'll talk about it later, but I saw a couple of things that might be a possibility.
Thank you so much. Yeah, please let's chat or send me some emails. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
All right. See you, Darlene. See you, Billable.
Take care. See you.
Later.
Good night.
Fantastic little mini roundtable conversation there. Thank you to Darlene for getting it started. Thank you to Billable Rick for jumping into it. And thanks to all of you who keep the program going and who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you so much. Thanks to Larry in Liberalville again for that massive challenge. We're done with fundraising for the month of September. And so, you know, from now till the end of September, the only thing we'll be doing is thanking subscribers. And I cannot thank you all for making that possible enough. That's tremendous. It's huge. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks very kindly to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. on HeadOn.live, the best place to listen to the Malloy program and join around the Malloy campfire. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And thanks to all of you for lifting me out of my end of summer funk there at the beginning of the program. I sincerely appreciate that as well. And always, Gina. It's all for you. Please stay safe. We've passed 200,000 dead from the Dondemic, and that son of a bitch bragged about it today. Just sickening. Stay safe. Stay home if you can. If you can't, take every possible precaution. Wear your masks. Wash your hands. Wear your gloves. Don't touch your face. Maintain social distance, not just of 6 feet, but of 10 or more, if possible, per the advice of our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown. And by all means, if you see somebody coming at you saying, a mask is a sign of your willingness to submit to socialism, avoid that person like the plague, because A, they are, and B, they'll probably be dead soon. Later, y'all.